This is Rod Meadsperry, digital editor for the Shambhala Sun Foundation, and I'm on the line with Steve Silberman, whose article in our March 2010 issue called Did You Get the Message? Looks at how to mindfully navigate through an increasingly online world. Thanks so much for joining me, Steve.
Thank you, Rod. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Now, regarding the article and how it fits in into all of our lives, as we interact more and more online, one question we need to look at is how to do so in a healthy way. Where do the real and virtual worlds begin and end, or do you think we have to see them as being of a piece?
Rod, that's an excellent question, and I think that more and more we have to think of the online and the offline worlds as of a piece. There was just a major study that was written up in the New York Times. It was a study by the Kaiser Family Foundation that found that kids and teenagers are spending about 11 hours a day engaged in online media, whether that's web surfing or downloading or texting or tweeting, 11 hours a day. What that means is that it's not so much a question of drawing a distinction between online life and offline life. For the next generation of us, it's basically the online world is as much a part of their lives as the air that they breathe or the food that they eat. So we have to think about ways that we can live in that transformed world with more sanity and compassion and simple happiness and contentment, because that's where many of us are, at least those of us who can afford to be there. And for all of us, I mean, my life has really changed quite a bit since 1993 when I first got online. I used to think of the internet as sort of this thing that was contained in the box on my desk. And now in my iPhone, I carry it with me wherever I am, and I'm basically rarely outside of the stream of tweets and messages and emails, except when I'm meditating at home. That's a time when I turn everything off and I'm not engaged in interaction. But basically, that's where we live now, so we have to figure out how to live there in ways that are kind and that produce contentment rather than anxiety and other negative emotions.
Now, you talk about the fact that you meditate at home, and neither of us are the young kids that you're talking about in this study, but you are perhaps the only person I know personally who's online more often than I am. yeah, I follow you on the web. I find that when I follow you on the web, I become a lot smarter about what's going on in the world, both on the web and on the ground, so to speak. I was wondering if you could talk about your own experience of the web in terms of how it's helped support your practice of meditation, how things have changed, and how you're making the most of that change.
Well, the way that I first got involved with practice was that I went to see Allen Ginsberg give a poetry reading. I had a sort of a major experience emotionally seeing him, and then I really felt that I was supposed to know him and work with him and help him in whatever way I could. I went back to my college, Oberlin College, and my poetry professor says, "Oh, you're in luck. He teaches at Europa Institute." Well, as many people listening to this know, it was truly Naropa Institute, but it took me a month to figure that out because there was no internet. Then it took me another couple of weeks to mail away to Naropa, get the catalog back, decide that I was going to go there and study with Alan, and that's where I was introduced to Buddhism by Mizumi Roshi of LA Zen Center. However, now we live in an age where if I had heard about, you know, Naropa Institute, I would have figured out within a couple of minutes that it was Naropa. I would have been able to peruse the catalog, decide to go, etc. So we live in a vastly accelerated period of discovery, in a sense. There was a wonderful column in the New York Times today that talked about that what these media allow us to do is what the writer called controlled serendipity, where basically we are constantly in the process of filtering, accumulating items of interest and, you know, items of insight, and then passing them on to the communities that we have built online and communities that have collected around us online, like our Facebook friends or people who follow us on Twitter. And basically, what I have to do, and I'm still working on this, is figuring out what the appropriate balance between time spent online and time spent in that very hot river of information exchange and time where I really pull away, disengage, turn off, just stop looking in a sense, and settle into, say, my body or the physical sensations of breathing or not articulating in my mind. I mean, I had a discussion that I talk about in my article with Tarrant Roshi about how the internet can really encourage monkey mind, I was saying. And I was really worried about that because it seems like it's like an amplifier for that chattering part of our minds that's never at rest. And he made a very zen but a very beautiful point about that there is a part of the mind that is completely free and just simply observes that happening. Oh, he thinks he's online now and he thinks he's distracted and going crazy. But learning how to abide in that freedom underneath all the chattering distraction is something that I'm eager to try to do and to accept the help of people who write for The Sun and all of us out there in learning how to be happier in this world that we've built.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. I hope our readers will check out the article. It's called Did You Get the Message? It's on page 47 of our March 2010 issue. And I hope they'll not only read it, but they'll learn to follow you online as well.
Thank you very much, Rod. Love The Sun, and it's great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you.